It's time to talk retirement, brought to you by Evergreen Lifestyle, offering you a partnership for life. Now, last week we spoke about how adult children can help their parents prepare and plan for retirement with Arthur Case, CEO of Evergreen. Arthur, great to chat again.
Great to be back on your show, Michael. Thanks for the invitation.
And tonight we're talking about the importance of continuous care in retirement villages. And I think the reality is that time is going to come for all of us. And ironically, it's the thing we often dread the most. Although evolution is this kind of natural and necessary state, I think the change is what challenges us. The change in our older lives can be particularly so, from running a business to retirement, change from being healthy to not being so healthy, change from being perhaps married to widowed, and all of these changes are very difficult to navigate. So within that context, what does continuous care to help us through that transition and change mean to you?
Okay, well, I think, you know, coming from the retirement village industry, the context that we look at this is that, you know, not everybody is going to need access to a care center when they age. In fact, they say that's, you know, something like 10% of your population is going to need a care center. But of course, when you're relatively young and healthy and living independently, you don't know whether you're going to be part of that 10% or not. So we think it's important that when you move to a retirement home, whether it is your own home or you're moving into a retirement village, you just need to be sure that you are close to care if you're going to need it, because you don't want to have to move a second time, you know, if you have a requirement for care that can't be met in your home. So we think it's important from that point of view that you make sure in your retirement planning that wherever you're going to live, that you are close to and have access to care if you need it.
What are the different offerings in the marketplace? Obviously, you've got assisted living, you've got continuous care as this kind of broad catch-all umbrella. But within that, how do you stratify the various offerings out in the market?
Yes, well, you know, we've coined the phrase continuous care, and what that means is that if you were to move into an evergreen retirement village, our promise is that we're going to provide continuous care, and there is a continuum. It starts with primary care, which all of us use from time to time. So seniors living independently in a retirement village would have access to a care center where they can get their blood pressure taken or their sugar measured or whatever else. If they're feeling poorly and they just need to see a nurse, they can do that. That's the primary care. Then we like the concept of home-based care. So we like people to be able to be cared for in their home. And when you've got a large care center, you obviously have the staff that can provide that service. And of course, home-based care and assisted living are very similar in concept, that the care is brought into a home. And then, of course, you know, as you age, you may have to go off and have surgery from time to time. It could be a hip replacement or a knee replacement or anything of that nature. And, of course, the medical aides like to get you out of hospital as soon as possible, so you could return to our care center for recuperative care. Because we are, you know, we are licensed for subacute care, which is recuperative care, and where we have a subacute license, your medical aid is going to pay for that recuperative care. Then you move on to frail care, and that really is for people who can no longer be looked after in their home, part of that 10% group I mentioned, who need full-time frail care, and you need to make provision for that. And then, of course, there is the possibility of people getting dementia of one form or another. And so you also want to have some kind of memory care facility. That's the apt word for it these days. It's not called a dementia care center. It's called a memory care center. And then, of course, if you're at the very end of that continuum I've just shared with you, you've got what is known as palliative care or end-of-life care, where you want to make sure that people are comfortable at the end of their lives. So if you string all of those together in the continuum, you have what we refer to as continuous care.
And Arthur, it's a point that's quite close to my heart. Having lost my father this year, it was actually his birthday on Tuesday. And, you know, just before my father died, I had the motivation to read a very interesting book, Atul Gawande's book called Being Mortal. And it really changed my perspective on palliative care in particular, and the way we approach this as we grapple with growing old. And you know, sometimes life care means choosing not to have another surgery or not to take medicines that may make the mind foggy and that sort of thing. And I think Gawanda expressed a need for a discussion here between the patient and the physician around the various priorities and the desires that you have of quality versus just extending life. How is that approach handled in the palliative end of that continuum in your continuous care facilities?
Yes, that is very interesting. It's a very interesting debate, that. And I think that the medical fraternity, and obviously we need them and they're very talented, but their doctors tend to focus on ensuring health and survival and necessarily focused on enabling well-being. And, you know, when you get to the end of your life, there are certain things that are going to break down and can't be fixed. And then I think that, you know, there needs to be an opportunity for the person concerned to be able to have a dignified conversation about the kind of treatment that they want. And it might not be to have surgery or to go through chemotherapy or any of those things. And I think that's what Gawande is referring to in his work. We obviously at Evergreen are not medical doctors, and we would never stand in the way of advice from a resident's medical doctor or from their family. But we do try to create an environment where people can be treated, can have a life at the end of their lives, and be treated with absolute care and dignity and love. That's the objective. I think all too often what happens is that the medical professionals and the children make the decisions on behalf of the senior who's going through challenges. And sometimes that's the only way it can be done. But on other occasions, we need to understand how the person themselves is feeling about the kind of care that they want to put themselves through. So in our care centres, as I say, we're not doctors. We employ qualified nursing sisters and care staff, and who carry out the wishes of the medical doctor, but we do whatever we can to understand the needs and the desires of the resident, and make sure that we can provide comfort and care to end of life.
But it also underscores the importance of having a living will here, and it's not one of those topics that you jump out of bed and automatically want to discuss with your significant other or your children. But yes, the fact is, there are only two certainties in life, death and taxes. So one has to have a plan in mind in case one is left incapacitated, perhaps with dementia. Yes. And if you don't have that written down, it's very difficult for those who are left behind trying to make those decisions on your behalf. It can really be a trying and taxing time.
Absolutely, Michael. A living will is something which I and my wife have, I think, but it's a personal choice again, but it's something that we choose. But interestingly, when someone checks into a frail care center, you go through a whole procedure with the person who is being admitted, and usually with the family. And normally in a frail care center, which is not a hospital, one of the things that you agree to is that the care center does not resuscitate. So it's not a question of trying to keep people alive if there's a medical issue or emergency. It's a question of keeping them comfortable and being with them and providing palliation or palliative care. But a frail care center is normally a place where you don't try to resuscitate, but you make sure that you're keeping the person comfortable and free of pain.
Now, the other side of the coin is obviously whether or not you can afford this, because it all sounds wonderful, but it also sounds prohibitively expensive. And what does your medical aid pay for? What doesn't it pay for? And I think any good financial planner would say, ask those hard questions about what you are getting yourself into before you're considering signing any contract. So what are some of the key questions that we should be asking before we commit to any of these options?
Yes, well, if you look at, you mentioned medical aids, generally medical aids do not fund frail care. They will fund step-down care or subacute care, and of course it's in their interest to do so because the sooner that the patient can move out of the hospital into a step-down facility, a subacute facility, obviously their costs come down. So those kind of services can be funded by your medical aid. But it's an area which is really not spoken of, and most people do not have post-retirement funds for healthcare outside of what the medical aid covers. And I think most people think, well, I'm on a medical aid, so I'm going to be fine. But that may not be the case when it comes to treating and looking after someone who's become frail or someone who has acquired dementia or Alzheimer's. And those have to be funded by the individual themselves or the family. So, yes, care is expensive. You know, in a normal frail care, your staffing ratio is one nursing staff member to three frail residents, but the moment you go into, for example, dementia or memory care, that ratio goes up to 1:1. So with every person that you're looking after, there is a caregiver. And you can just imagine what that does to the cost of operating these centers. So, yes, it is expensive, and it's something people have to plan for if they feel that might be a part of their future.
Any final thoughts on the matter, Arthur?
No, I think as we said last week when we spoke about children assisting their parents, it's conversations people need to have. Everybody feels differently. We need to follow the advice of our medical professionals. But from our perspective at Evergreen Lifestyle, all we want to do is we would like to offer our residents a fantastic retirement lifestyle where they can enjoy the facilities while they are independent, and most people, you know, the 90% plus hopefully will always be in that position. But for those who are going to need care, we're going to make sure that there is continuous care. So if you become a resident of Evergreen, there will always be the level of care that you need. There is obviously the issue of can you afford it, and we can help in that circumstance with the LifeRight model. But our goal is to make sure that the care is there if you need it, and that we can provide that care with the necessary dignity that that our residents deserve.
Well, as always, Arthur, I think you handle a very difficult subject with great dexterity and care yourself, because it isn't an easy conversation, but that doesn't detract from its import either. So thank you for your time, and we'll catch up with you same time next week.
Fantastic, Michael. Have a great weekend.
That was Arthur Kay, CEO of Evergreen Lifestyles, bringing you this week's retirement feature, which is in partnership with Evergreen, offering you a partnership for life.